Welcome to the Transform Your Mind Radio Hour and Podcast, a show about transformation, mindset transformation. This is Life Coach Marnie Young, and in my book, Out of the Snares, A Story of Hope and Encouragement, I share my journey of being born in poverty in Guyana to have an abundance in America. And I did it by changing my mindset. Let's go do it. Each week, I bring you guests or one-on-one coaching sessions to help you change your mindset and transform your life. Welcome back to the Transform Your Mind to Transform Your Life radio, podcast, and television show. I'm your host, Life Coach Marnie Young. And sitting in the guest chair today is Dr. Gleb Kiperski. Dr. Gleb has been he has been on this show three times now. And he has been the most interviews that I've done with any one guest. Let's put it that way. So he loves being on the show, and I love talking to him because he's always bringing relevant information. We've talked about COVID. We've talked about the pandemic. And now today we're going to talk about what is the impact of Russia's war on Ukraine, on the world. And Dr. Gleb is going to be talking not only from a disaster avoidance expert, but also as a Ukrainian, because his family is from the Ukraine. So welcome, Dr. Gleb.
Thank you so much for having me back on, Marnie. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. I have always have so much fun.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure to talk to you too. So thank you for always coming and talking about relevant topics. I love it. I love it. All right. So let me give you new listeners, old listeners, a short bio on Dr. Gleb. Dr. Gleb Kiperski is a world-renowned thought leader in future-proofing, decision-making, and cognitive bias risk management in the future of work. He serves as the CEO of the boutique future-proofing consultancy, Disaster Avoidance Experts, which helps forward-looking leaders in Fortune 500 firms, middle market companies, and growing startup avoid disastrous threats and missed opportunities. He's also the best-selling author of Never Go With Your Gut, How Pioneering Leaders Make the Best Decisions and Avoid Business Disasters, as well as several other publications, too many to list here now, but you guys can check them out. He was featured in over 350 articles and 450 interviews in Harvard Business Review, Fortune, USA Today, Inc. Magazine, CBC News, Time, Business Insider, and lots more. His expertise comes from over 20 years of consulting, coaching, and speaking and training for Fortune 500 companies, and over 15 years in academia as a behavioral scientist. Dr. Gleb's father is Ukrainian, and he immigrated with his family to the United States in 1991. Awesome. So this must be tough for you and your family, this war, this Russia's war in Ukraine. So as we start off, Dr. Gleb, tell me your Ukrainian heritage and why your family decided to immigrate to the U.S.
Well, my father, as I mentioned, is from Ukraine, from a town there called Vinnytsia. And we had family all around Ukraine. We still have extended family in Kiev. I'm not sure what's going on with them right now. We've been trying to contact them and we haven't been able to. So I hope they're okay. Maybe they're refugees somewhere and just don't have their contact information, because my parents used to talk to them on the phone. So no email.
That's so sad, because that's one of the cities that's been hit hardest. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yep, exactly. It's the capital. And so we don't know what's happening to them. And I really hope that they're okay. And so my family left. So my father is Ukrainian. My mother is Moldovan. Moldova is a small country to the southwest of Ukraine. east of Romania, that territory. It's one of the territories that's taking some of the Ukrainian refugees. And so I was born in Moldova and spent summers in Ukraine and lived in a lot of Moldova. And when I was in 10, my family decided to immigrate. It was 1991 when the Soviet Union was falling apart, so the Berlin Wall fell, and that enabled my family to immigrate. And my family has a Jewish heritage, which Jews were not very welcome in the Soviet Union as well. So culturally, religiously, that was a problem. And so my family decided to immigrate. I was 10 in 1991, so didn't really have a choice in the matter, but I was definitely glad that they left, because life in the United States was much better, especially in 1996. I saw an interesting world values survey that showed the country where I was born, Moldova, was the least happy country in the world of all the countries surveyed. The least happy country in the world. I'm not sure why, but it was definitely made me especially glad that I left. And so growing up here in the United States, I grew up in New York City. This was home. And, seeing everything about Russia, Ukraine breaking up, that there weren't these sorts of military conflicts between Russia and Ukraine earlier. This was not a situation I was worried about. And the interesting thing is, here in the United States, everyone from that part of the world, from Russia, from Ukraine, from Moldova, from Belarus, Lithuania, Latvia, Estonia, and other former Soviet territories, there's no real difference between people. That's all people who share a common language. Russian is the lingua franca. Okay? Lingua franca is a term for a shared language. Like English is a shared language among many people.
Yeah. So
Russian was the shared language among many people.
Okay.
And so everyone who grew up in the United States felt themselves to be part of a Russian-speaking community. And of course, that is something that's very much at odds and tensions with what's going on right now. We can talk about that and kind of as part of the impact of Russia and Ukraine war. But the crucial thing to realize is that my family didn't leave to escape a war. They left to escape individual persecution as people with a Jewish background religiously. And I'm very glad that they left, and they wanted also a better economic situation. And so that's why they moved here. And, I've been here for the last 30 years, and I'm an American citizen, and definitely that's my primary identity. But a Russian-speaking identity is part of my identity, and specifically the Ukrainian subcomponent of it. And that's just been so devastating to deal with the conflicts between Russia and Ukraine, where Russia unjustly and unfairly, without any real cause, invaded Ukraine. We can go, I'm going to stop talking right now because I don't want to get too deep into it. You asked about my family leaving, but that's the reason for my family leaving.
Yeah, well, while you were talking, I had an interesting question. And that was what Putin said was the reason that he invaded Ukraine, something about there were Jewish Nazis. And and everybody said that was a ludicrous idea because your president is Jewish. So educate us to what you think was going on there with Putin. Why did the Jews come into the conversation?
So the crucial thing, so again, I have a Jewish background, and so does the current president of Ukraine, Zelensky, who has become world famous right now.
I know.
For good reason.
Yeah.
And
they're probably going to give him one of those awards. He's doing right.
Yeah, I hope so. The Nobel Peace Prize or something like that.
Well, that's
hope
right. So. Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so Ukraine and Russia and all that part of the world, a really important part of their heritage is fighting against the Nazi Germany in World War II. So if you think of the history books in Russia, in Ukraine, in Moldova, in Belarus, Latvia, Estonia, in the United States, you have the 1776 Revolution as like a fundamental episode in American history, kind of the founding myth. In the Russia, Belarus, Ukraine, that part of the world, the former Soviet territories, World War II is really the crucial element that is in the history books as marking the rise of the Soviet Union, Russia, Ukraine. And so that was a fight against Nazi Germany. And okay. That's part of the people's identity.
I thought I knew my mother better than anyone because I'm the eldest. But one day my brother was talking about the story I'd never heard before. That got me wondering, how many of the stories don't I know? That's why I got my mom Storyworth, so that she can record for us the stories that really happened. Storyworth is an online service that helps you and your loved ones connect through sharing stories and memories. Each week, Storyworth emails my mom a thought-provoking question of her choice. I started my own Storyworth book, and one of the questions was, tell me about a childhood vacation. Since I never went on a childhood vacation, I changed that question to something I actually did as a child. After 1 year, Storyworth compiles all those questions and stories, including photos, into a beautiful hardcover keepsake book the whole family can share for generations. Give all the moms in your life a meaningful gift you'll both cherish for years. Storyworth. Right now, for a limited time, you'll save $10 on your first purchase when you go to storyworth.com/Myrna. That's storyworth.com/MYRNA to save $10 on your first purchase. That website again is storyworth.com/Myrna.
So whenever the political leadership is trying to scare people and manipulate them into doing what the leadership wants, it brings out the specter of Nazis as a threat and labels everything bad on the Nazis. And so that when Putin was saying denazification, he's not speaking to us. He's speaking to his own people to justify the war. He doesn't think that the world outside Russia will be convinced that there are any actual real Nazis in the Ukrainian government.
Why did he bring that up? Because everybody said it was ludicrous.
Right.
But that's what that's why they said he was also crazy and living in his own world, because he came up with that, the most ludicrous reason.
So that's the reason that he came up with, we need to differentiate between the audience. He's not speaking to us, to outsiders. He's speaking to his own people, the Russians. Oh. Okay. And so with his own people, that's a phrase that resonates, because they don't know that Zelensky is Jewish. They don't know what's actually going on in Ukraine.
Yeah.
He keeps them
in this little circle of whatever he wants them to hear. They have no outside, they have no outside input. Right.
Right. Even, your radio show doesn't unfortunately reach them, right?
No.
It would be nice if it did. But the Ukrainian people are connected to the outside world. The Russian people used to be before the war started. So there was, after the start of the war, the Russian government started cutting off contacts to the outside world with venues like, CNN, Fox News, and so on, BBC, not allowed, Facebook and all of these other social media sources being banned, and also internal Russian newspapers that were voicing opposition to the war, and websites and TV channels and radio stations were all taken off there. And so their narrative, the way that how do people get their information? The large majority of people in Russia get their information from state sponsored television channels. And those television channels convey the message that, Ukraine is full of Nazis. Nazis are the scary figures that are used to manipulate public opinion. In the United States, the equivalent would be, Ukraine is full of terrorists or something like that.
Yeah,
right?
All right. Yeah. I get you. Well, right. Well, it's equal as far as relevance goes. All right.
Exactly.
So that was a good background into your family history. And thank you for, explaining a little bit about what Putin is doing as far as his conversation about the Nazi Germany. But let's talk about you. So you became a risk management and decision-making expert. Mm-hmm. And when we're talking about war, when we're talking about the pandemic, when we're talking about anything that has risk, that is where you're an expert on. Mm-hmm. So tell us about this risk management and what is that all about?
Sure, happy to. So there's a reason that my book is called Never Go With Your Gut, about these questions. Our intuition, unfortunately, has been shown to lie to us very often. And many people trust their intuitions. They rely on it. They think that, you know, I should trust my gut. That's it. It tells me something. That's what I should do. I mean, that's what Putin did when he invaded Ukraine, right? Yeah. He trusted his gut, and we can see where it landed him in some very bad places.
His gut told him that it would be an easy win.
Exactly. And you're exactly right, Myrna. And you can see that his gut was very wrong.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And that's because he bought into these ideas and myths that you should trust your gut, you should follow your intuition, despite the advice of many military advisors who are telling him. Now we know, we have some information from Putin's government that military advisors were very unhappy with his plan to invade Ukraine in the way that he did, because they did not think that there would be an easy victory. They thought it would be a long and hard victory, but Putin thought it would be an easy victory, and therefore he sent his troops very quickly with things like sending unaccompanied tanks to try to take Kiev, sending paratroopers without sufficient support to try to occupy airfields around Kiev, to basically take the political capital, and therefore end the war quickly. And that worked out very badly for him.
Yeah.
And we can see this all the time. There is extensive research showing. So my background is in behavioral science, which means how do we behave and why do we behave the way it is? Part of it is cognitive neuroscience. How does the structure of our mind shape what we do? Now, the interesting thing about that is that our mind is really not evolved for the modern environment. So when we see what our mind is evolved for, our intuition, our gut reactions, those parts of ourselves, they're evolved for the savanna environment. When we lived in small tribes of 50 people to 150 people, we had to survive using the fight or flight reflex. You know, it was better to jump at 100 shadows than to miss one saber-toothed tiger, because the people who missed the saber-toothed tiger didn't survive and they didn't pass on their genes. It was very important for us to be tribal and to be loyal to our tribe. If we weren't sufficiently tribal, we'd be kicked out of our tribe and we'd die and we wouldn't pass on our genes. And so we have certain intuitions that are shaped by that savanna environment, the various structures of our minds, which cause our mind to be lazy, minimizing the work that needs to be done. It causes us to make very quick snap judgments and make decisions based on past tendencies and predictions of what would happen. So for example, with Ukraine, when Putin was able to annex Crimea in 2014, there was not a very strong international push and reaction against him. And the Ukraine army did not perform very well. And so he judged that based on past trends, the same thing would happen now, that there wouldn't be...
I heard about 2014, right? Yes. Right.
Yeah, so in 2014, he took over Crimea from Ukraine. And so that was that episode. And he thought that, well, I'll just do this, you know, a little bit more intense version of it. Maybe there'll be a little bit more of an intense pushback, but it won't be that much. But he really did not calculate and listen to his advisors and intelligence agents and military folks who told him that, look, this is going to be a really different situation. The Ukraine military
They have a new president now, and he's actually the one that is the leader of all this. He underestimated the enemy, right?
Exactly. Yep. He underestimated Zelensky. He underestimated the Ukrainian military, which was very much strengthened both by Ukraine itself and by Western arms, military arms during that period. And he underestimated the strength and resolve of the international response, which was very strong. And
what he said to himself, they're not part of NATO, so they can't help him.
Exactly.
So he made a lot of bad calculations. Yes.
Exactly.
Yes.
And that's the kind of calculations we all tend to fall into if we go with our gut, as Putin did. And so that's the thing that we need to avoid. We need to learn that our gut often is not to be trusted. There's a reason that about 40% of marriages end in divorce, right? Because people tend to trust their gut, their intuitions
more than 40%. You're it's, being, yeah, you're, yeah, you're being, yes, more than 40%.
Yes, more than 40%. So,
over 40%. Right, right. Yeah, you're right. You marry somebody because of your gut. Yeah.
Exactly. You marry somebody because of your gut, but that's not why you should marry someone.
Yeah.
You should make a more evaluative and calculating decision. And it feels very weird for people to hear this, that they should make a calculating decision about who to marry. But if you don't think through your decision, you are not going to think through how are you going to stay. Let's say you want kids. How are you going to stay together when you have kids and you'll have very serious strains on your relationship, right?
Are you ready to change your career? Then a career in cosmetology may be for you. The Elaine Sterling Institute offers four dynamic programs: massage therapy, nail care, esthetician, and cosmetology, with flexible schedules available to suit your busy lifestyle. Located in the iconic Lenox Square Mall at 3393 Peachtree Road, Atlanta, Georgia, and boasting over 38,000 square feet that includes a salon and spa so you can get training working with the public. The Elaine Sterling Institute offers financial aid for those who qualify. Get started on your new career by visiting the Elaine Sterling Institute on the web at www.elainesterling.com or by calling 404-256-5228. That website again is elainesterling.com. It's really interesting. I was listening to a book by Lewis Hayes. She's, you know, she's no longer with us. She's dead. But basically, she was saying exactly all of the same thing. She says that almost based on the same thing that you're saying, that 50% of marriages end in divorce. Mm-hmm. And most times when the marriage ends in divorce, the women are the ones that are taking care of the kids. So she was saying almost what you're saying now, that before you get married, before you have kids, ask yourself if you're willing to be a single parent, because there's a 50% chance that you would. And if you're not willing, then maybe you shouldn't have kids. So saying exactly what you're saying, right?
Yeah, that's a very important insight. Or figure something out or make a plan in advance and say, look, you know, if I'm the woman, I don't want to be the sole caretaker of the kids. If we have kids, we'll need to divide up the responsibilities 50%, right? Otherwise, so one of the most common periods for people to get divorced, when you look at when people get divorced, is the first year after having a child, which is pretty terrible.
Wow.
Yep. Pretty terrible for a woman. Imagine a woman.
I didn't know that statistic, right? Yep.
Yep. Mm-hmm. It's the most common period. So for people to get, after a first year of marriage, when people might have instability, the next period is the first year after you have a child. And so that is something that you really need to realize, that this is when the plurality of marriages fail, right? So this is where you want to realize that, and you want to have a plan for addressing it. And you want to ask, is the person I'm marrying really the kind of person who can deal with the stress and strain of that period of time, right? It may not be. And you may choose not to marry this person, or you may choose not to have kids, or there are a number of other choices that you can make, right?
This is
when you have a lot of mismatches in a very fundamental area of life, right? And that applies to all areas of life, where we make bad decisions in our business. There are many business leaders who make pretty terrible decisions during the pandemic, and can go into that, or right now during the effort to return to work, where there are some companies that are trying to force workers to return to work 9 to 5 and kind of completely office centric. And they're seeing so many people resign because people value their flexibility much more, and they want remote work or hybrid work or something like that.
Yeah.
And they don't want to do the unpaid labor of the commute. They want coming to the office to be worth the commute.
Yeah,
right?
My daughter heads back to work this week, but she's only doing 2 days a week. So that's a good compromise.
Yeah, that's a reasonable compromise.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But that's the kind of thing that you want to be thinking about. Business leaders are making some bad mistakes around this right now. And so people in all areas business leaders, political leaders, ordinary people with marriages and their careers, all sorts of decisions, big and small. We make bad mistakes because we go with our gut. And that's what I wanted to learn. That's what I wanted to understand. Why do we make these bad mistakes? And how can we do better? And so that's why I went into decision-making and risk management. And what I learned is that we all have a series of mental blind spots. These are called cognitive biases. If you want to look them up on Wikipedia, there's over 100 of them. I talk about the 30 most dangerous ones in my book, Never Go With Your Gut. And I talk about how to address these problems. The nice thing about them is that they're systematic. So we know that there's a systematic number of ways. There's a specific number of ways that our brains can go wrong. For example, we all tend to be overconfident to some extent or another, men more so than women. But even women tend to be somewhat overconfident on average. Doesn't mean at average, on every point you're going to be overconfident, but on most things, we're going to be more confident than we should be about the quality of our decisions. And you can understand why. In the savanna environment, it was very important for us to make a snap judgment, right? Mm-hmm. Because if we didn't make a snap judgment, I mentioned the fight or flight reflex would be eaten by a saber-toothed tiger.
Right.
And so we still have those impulses to make decisions quickly without sufficient information. That's what a snap judgment is. And we do that because we're overconfident. And just like Putin was overconfident in this situation, people are overconfident about those they should marry, right? So this is just one out of over 100 of these cognitive biases.
The marriage thing, sometimes you just jump in.
Exactly. And that's a bad idea. Yeah, that's not a good idea.
You just jump in.
Yeah, and that's a problem that people, there's a reason over 50% of marriages, like you say, Mirna, end in divorce. Right. So you'd never want to just jump in. This is not a saber-toothed tiger situation. This is a situation where you can wait and evaluate and gather evidence and make a better decision. And that's what I focus on, helping folks make better decisions in their life, in their business.
I know you've been here a while, several times, and we have a whole episode on don't go with your gut on your book. Mm-hmm. But I want to ask now, so if you're not going with your gut, how do you make decisions quickly? I mean, if in the marriage situation, you can sit down with a piece of paper and list all the pros and list all the cons and look at the red flags and look all that. But let's say that you have to make a decision quickly. If you're not going with your gut, how are you making this decision?
So it depends on how much time you need to make a decision. If you need to make a decision on the spot, of course, you can't do anything else, right? If you have a bus battling down at you, you're not going to take the time to think about, do I go left or do I go right? Or what do I do? You're just going to go quickly with your instincts. Those are the life or death situations where the impulses from the savanna environment are still quite good. The life or death situations, the immediate, you have to make a choice.
I wasn't talking about life and death, but I was just thinking, all right, let's say a typical thing, somebody surprises you and asks you to marry them, because people, mm-hmm. men seem to like to do that. And they put you on the spot and it comes right out of the blue and you've got to make a decision. It's not life or death, but you got a decision. What do you make? You say yes or no. Do you want to embarrass them? Do you want to embarrass your friends? Do you want to, So give me an example of,
That's pretty easy. You just say yes, and then you think about it later, because you're not married once you say yes. You're just engaged.
Well, that's smart. That's smart.
Saying yes doesn't mean that you're actually going to marry them. Saying yes is that you don't want to make a scene.
Some women do say no, though.
I understand, and they're okay making a scene. But I think it's if you don't want to make a scene and if you don't want to embarrass, if that's not a way you want to go, just say yes and then think about it later.
That's actually not bad.
Yeah. So it's bad. Like you're just engaged. You're not meeting married. So that's much easier. Yeah. But yes, in the large majority of situations, but the broader answer to your question is, in the large majority of situations, you have at least a couple of minutes to think about it, right? So let's say, imagine a job interview, and somebody says, here, I'm going to offer you the job, but you have to take it right now on the spot in the next 10 seconds. You probably never want to work for that asshole.
Because they're not giving you time to think about it. Got you.
Exactly. Got you. Exactly. Mm-hmm. What will the job be like? What kind of spots will they put you into when you're in the job itself, right? How will you right work away, with
right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You do not want to work for this person, no matter if the job seems good to you. This is a very bad, bad, bad fit. So in the large majority of situations, if somebody doesn't give you time, if they put you on the spot and say, give me the answer now, you should just say no, because that's not going to be a good collaborator. That's not going to be a good person you want to work with. There's probably something about the arrangement that's bad for your interests. Otherwise, they would give you time to evaluate and examine it and think about it, right?
It's really interesting. I just finished watching the movie King Richard, and that's exactly what happened. Someone offered Venus Williams $3 million, and she had to make the decision that very night. And they said, why do we have to make this decision right away? It doesn't seem right. And they didn't. And a couple months later, she got $14 million.
Wonderful. Yep. Yep.
So exactly. You're right. It was not in her best interest. And that's why they were forcing it. That's actually pretty good. You know, because if you can say, you know, that exactly what you just said, that if you're ever put in a spot where someone don't want you to think about it, you're right. It's not in your best interest, because why are they not giving you time to think about it, right?
Exactly. Yep, right. Exactly. Yep. So This is when, in the large majority of these decisions, you should say no, because that's not, that is not a good idea for you to accept that sort of proposal. Yeah, like so so that's why in your life, you should always take the time to think about something. Any decision that you don't want to screw up,
How do you think about it? Do you do a column with the yes, with the pros and cons, or what's the format?
Sure.
Thinking about the thing.
Yeah. So what I advise my clients to do is to use, instead of a pro and con. So pro and con has a number of cons itself, partially because you can't really weigh up the reasons against each other. You know, you might have let's go to the marriage, right? Of you can have the pro of having kids. The con might be having less time and having less money and having worse relationship, right? So because you have those strains with your spouse, right? So how do you weigh those? You know, does the kids cancel out one of those? Does it cancel out two of those? You know, how do you weigh that? So pros and cons have, as a list, is a technique that's not very helpful in many ways. So what I instead advise my clients to do is to ask themselves 5 questions about any decision. What important information didn't I yet fully consider? So that helps you get at information that goes against your intuitions. That's the important information. Information that goes against your beliefs. You might feel like marrying this person. What are the reasons for not marrying this person? Try to prove yourself wrong. Try to disconfirm yourself. Try to prove to yourself that you shouldn't take this deal, that you should not start this war, that you should not take this job. If you can't prove it to yourself, you're more likely to be correct. But if you can prove yourself wrong, that's great, because then you're not going to make a bad decision.
Okay.
So the second, what dangerous judgment errors didn't I yet address? And once you read my book, you'll see the 30 most dangerous ones, and you can address them. So for example, I already talked about overconfidence bias, the tendency to be too confident and make decisions way too quickly. Another one is called the empathy gap, where we tend to underestimate the emotions of other people in their decision-making. So for example, Putin definitely underestimated the emotions of the Ukrainian military and people in their willingness to oppose an invading Russian force. Mm-hmm. And there's so many times when in marriages, people underestimate the emotions of their loved one, and they think that their loved one should behave in a more cool, rational fashion, but that's not realistic. People aren't cool, rational robots. You need to understand where their emotions are coming from and what will cause them to have positive or negative emotions. Mm-hmm. And that's another one. And there are a number of others.
Okay.
Cognitive biases. So third question, what would a trusted and objective advisor tell me to do? This is basically about taking an outside step, outside view of the situation. So think about another, let's say you're in a marriage, think about another couple, not you, but who are placed in a similar position, similar situation. What would you advise them to do? What kind of things might go wrong? What troubles might occur? You know, the what if you took this job, what might be the problems? What might be the benefits? Have an external perspective. And that's a really crucial research finding from the decision-making research, that we tend to take an internal perspective on life from around where we are. We don't tend to step outside of ourselves and look at ourselves from the outside. If we do that, we will realize that, hey, we are going to make much better decisions if we can take a look at ourselves from the outside and think about, how would other people perceive this? What would other people say in the situation? How would, you know, when you're in a partnership, in a relationship, in a way, in a marriage, what would my partner, spouse say about this? So take a look at yourself from outside. Next, fourth, we're going to the implementation stage. How have I addressed all the ways this could fail? So this is a really important to think about in advance, whether you're in a marriage. You know, maybe you want to have a prenuptial agreement. Maybe you want to discuss things about, you know, your future life and money, which is always a tricky question, with your spouse and other things. About a career, about business deal, you want to always think about how they can fail. And finally, what new information would cause me to revisit this decision? So what would cause you to change your mind about what decision you made? You know, there's a nice thing about being between the period when you're engaged and period when you're married, that you can find out more information about your fiancé. And that is a good time for you to decide to pull out if things don't work. Yes. If things don't work, right?
I like that.
Same thing about business deal. You should have time. Think about what would cause you to reevaluate the business deal or the career choice, whatever you're making.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'm glad I asked the question. It was a little bit off of our topic, but thank you for that. All right, so let's get back to the war on Ukraine. So what do you think is the impact of Russia's war on Ukraine, on Ukrainians, and then on the Russians living in the United States?
So Ukrainians like myself are definitely devastated by it. And we feel very strongly a lot of anger, a lot of frustration. And there's especially this very weird dynamic where we are all part of the Russian-speaking community, right? But now the Russian language, and many Ukrainian, I don't speak Ukrainian. No, that's not true. I speak a little bit of Ukrainian language, but very many Ukrainians don't speak any Ukrainian language, especially ones who come from more from Eastern Ukraine, because it just was not something that you needed in Ukraine way back when. Russian was the lingua franca, and that was used by people in urban parts of the country, so in cities, and especially in Eastern Ukraine. And so right now, many Ukrainians are in the weird position of speaking a language that is associated with an enemy, and that is kind of their cultural heritage. And that's kind of the position I find myself in. So that's like a really strange and weird dynamic. And there's a lot of sympathy and empathy for the people in Ukraine, especially with people like myself who have family there. And I'm really worried about them, and I don't know what's going on, and a strong desire to help, which is one reason I want to go on the show and talk to your audience about what it's like and help them understand what's going on there. So it's kind of Ukrainians and our experience. Now, I also have a lot of Russian friends and interest. My wife is actually Russian. She's from Moscow. And I have a lot of other Russian people in my life. And I know that their feeling, their main feeling is shame. Shame for what Russia is doing. For example, people are burning their passports and just putting lighter fluid on their passports and burning them. And they're expressing a lot of shame and grief and frustration and feeling that, you know, they can't ever go back to Russia, kind of cutting their ties and feeling like they are really just ashamed of what's going on, the really negative emotions and concerns about what's going to happen. A lot of concerns. Of course, a number of them have friends like me who are Ukrainian or have family in Ukraine, know a lot of Ukrainians. And so this is something that's a tension. So they're feeling ashamed. They're also feeling, and the reality is that there's some persecution of people who are Russians.
Yeah.
And here in the United States, that's they're being persecuted by Americans who think that, well, all the Russians are the same. And that's just not true. The Russians who are here in the United States chose deliberately to leave Russia. You know, they do not want to be part of that territory.
The news is saying that the Russian people do not agree. But a lot of them risk being imprisoned for a long time to protest. Mm-hmm. So nobody is thinking that the Russian people agrees with Putin, which is one of the reasons that they all saying that he is trying to limit what showing them what he's actually doing. Mm-hmm. But what is happening is because there's all these sanctions against Russia, there's people that have businesses that they're seeing that their stuff being canceled because they're Russian. So that's basically what I think the effect of. In fact, my editor that edits my show is Russian. Hmm. And she said to me that she has family in the Ukraine and she's very worried about it or whatever. And she got herself out of Russia. She's no longer living in Russia. Told me she went to Turkey.
That makes sense. Yeah, good.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what's happening. And it's sad to see that there are some people in the United States who are expressing discrimination against people who are Russian. And of course, it's really hard to tell someone who's Russian from someone who's Ukrainian, like me, because it's kind of speaking the same language, same culture.
Right,
exactly. Mm. And so that's another kind of problem that we're experiencing, kind of discrimination. And that's something to really address, that the Russians who are here are specifically up left Russia. They do not want to be governed by that. So it's very important to not discriminate against them, to be supportive of them. In fact, my parents who are obviously from that part of the world, my dad's Ukrainian, I mentioned my mom's Moldovan, they actually stopped watching news in Russian because it's all propaganda now and switched to watching news in Ukrainian, which it's much harder for them to understand. And it's the language is different in the same way that Spanish and Portuguese is different. There's a number of similarities. You can make out some of the stuff. It's hard. But so that's kind of a major sacrifice for them to choose not to watch something that they can easily understand, but they don't want to watch that propaganda. And so people are changing their behaviors and obviously sending support, financial support to Ukraine, to their relatives, to whoever they can. And including Russians and Ukrainians are sending support. But there's definitely a tension in the community between people who are Russians and Ukrainians because Russians are ashamed and guilty about what's going on. And of course, Ukrainians are outraged and frustrated, but none of us are blaming the Russians in our lives for it. But of course, Russians are still feeling guilty about it.
So as you were talking, a question pop up. So is there going to be in the future is because it seems like Russia and Ukraine had this kind of relationship like Canada and United States.
Yes.
You know, most of the people in Canada, you know, most of the people in the United States come from Canada. They can go in the borders, you know, it's an open border kind of thing. Yeah. How is that going to affect it in the future? Is there going to be some hate there? Do you think that divide is going to be permanent?
Yeah, I think that this divide is going to be there for several generations because having this situation with just this brutal, brutal military conflict, especially some of the terrible war crimes coming out of Bucha and others with civilians being just executed, just their hands tied up and then being shot. That's a horrible thing. You know, how can you imagine like something that's going to be more terrible than just somebody who is without any process, without any trial, just round up and someone is just shot. You know, it's horrible. And of course, other things like terrible things like rape and so on, but just the killing of someone who is just without any particular reason. So discovering those things is especially bad. And just the shelling of Mariupol, killing all those civilians, that's pretty terrible. But this kind of the scenes, especially of the brutal, brutal atrocities and war crimes in Bucha and so on, is going to cause a lot of just hatred for a very long time. This is a pretty terrible consequence of one man's grandiosity and arrogance and stupidity and going with his gut.
Apparently, he's a narcissist psychopath. So,
you're right. So this is something.
The person that he's talking about, Hitler, he is exactly like Hitler.
And he is, and that's the thing. That's coming from going with your gut, right? People who are arrogant. There are people in the United States who are not political leaders, and the ordinary people who are arrogant, narcissistic, psychopathic, who just feel that they're entitled and they're grandiose and they're ambitious and they go with their gut. And, you know, they make some pretty bad decisions and they harm all of us. And it's very important for us all to be aware of what's going on there and our decision-making processes. Because if we're not aware of how we make our decisions, we'll make decisions badly.
Right. Okay. So what can the U.S. do about Russia's war in Ukraine? You have some advice for the political system. What is it?
Sure. So I think one of the really important things to think about is, how are Ukrainian citizens dealing with it from a humanitarian perspective, and to support Ukrainian citizens from a humanitarian perspective? I think that's very important. And what the United States does now will be remembered for a very long time, because the United States has been, in the global eyes, it has been weakened in a number of situations, foreign policy-wise. Like, let's say what happened in Afghanistan, that doesn't look good, and everywhere in Syria. Many other situations. So this is a chance for us to redeem ourselves and to really show that we are the leaders of the free world, and to really provide a model for how the world should act toward Ukraine. And helping rebuild Ukraine is incredibly important, including the parts of it. So right now, Russia is focusing on eastern Ukraine. I think there should be a lot of efforts to rebuild the western Ukraine, at least with something like the Marshall Plan that was instituted after World War II, where the United States helped rebuild Europe after it was devastated by World War II. Something like that should be instituted for Ukraine. And that's going to be very beneficial for us in the long run. So people ask, well, how much is it going to cost? It's definitely going to cost money right now. But think about the long term, the kind of goodwill we will get from all the people in Ukraine, the people around Ukraine and Europe and elsewhere, who will see the United States rebuilding a country that was devastated by foreign unfair
war. Do you think it should only be the United States? What about all the countries in NATO?
We're talking about what the United States can do right now, right? We're United States. I certainly think the countries in NATO, it would be nice if they help. But regardless of what they do, it's very important for us as the leaders of the free world. You know, the countries NATO aren't the leaders of the free world. We are the leaders of the free world. So we should model the kind of behavior we want to see. And we should make sure, by supporting Ukraine and building up Ukraine as a democratic country, we should make sure to support democracy around the world. Because right now we're very much facing threats to our democracy. Threats not only from Russia, but much more importantly, China, other countries that are authoritarian regional countries that are not behaving very well. And so we want to build up democracy. And that means building up Ukraine right now, and especially as the war winds down. And of course, at the same time, supplying Ukraine militarily, which we're currently doing. So I think that's great. I think we should continue doing that and build up on top of it. I certainly don't think we should put any of our forces in there, but I think we should provide them with weapons.
That decision was not made, so I doubt it'll be made now. But they're also, the United States is also accepting the Ukrainian refugees,
I think. Yes, so I want to get to that, yes.
But,
so I think,
but my question is, and it's probably, you know, you might not be able to answer, but I'm just, you know, talking off the top of my head. So you allow Putin to go in and destroy this country, and then somebody has to rebuild it. How do we stop him from doing it again, or stop any other country from doing it? Is there a way to stop that? Because he should rebuild it if he destroys it.
Well, sure, he will not do it. So this is the thing. It's easier to destroy than to build. That's first of all. And I think what will prevent him from doing it again is the sanctions that will degrade Russia's economy and ability to build more modern weapons. That's what we need to worry about. Russia having more modern weapons, and by using pretty harsh sanctions, which I think it would be good if the sanctions were ramped up more, that will punish Russia and prevent it from going to war easily again in the future. It will also demonstrate to other countries like China that they should not be invading countries in which they have an eye, like Taiwan.
And yeah, I know.
Is really
China was looking at this, and actually was Putin's ally. They saw nothing wrong with it.
And they still are. And if you look at the Chinese messaging, communication, propaganda, they're very much pro-Russian. So we want to make sure that we have very strong sanctions on Russia in order to discourage China and other countries from trying anything like this in the future. And that's really important. But building
it's also good that Putin did not succeed, because other people are still watching it. You know what I mean? It wasn't a successful venture. It was just a very costly venture, destroyed the whole country, killed innocent people, and he didn't get anything. He didn't possess the land. So,
and that's very important. You're absolutely right, Mirna. That's very important. So and that's coming in part from our military help, which is great. And also the sanctions are helping. So sanctions, keep the sanctions. But it is very important to rebuild Ukraine. Nobody will do it if we don't do it. And so this is the crucial thing that I think I want to point out, that we really need to work on rebuilding Ukraine if we want democracy to flourish. It's very easy to say democracy is great and it will flourish naturally, but we see that's not the case. China, Russia, and many other countries are authoritarian. And if we want democracy to win instead of authoritarianism like in China and in Russia, we need to build up democracies after they're devastated by authoritarian states. And so that's what I think is really important to see happen in Ukraine on the one hand. And refugees, I think we definitely want to welcome refugees, Ukrainian refugees. I don't think we should financially support them coming here, so that there's a natural filter system of only the most capable and dedicated ones coming here, because it takes a lot of money to come to the United States and then succeed.
Really? Yep. Okay.
So not have a program of evacuation like in Afghanistan, where we support people coming here. But if they do want to come here, to welcome them and give them visas and allow them to live here, because then we'll get the most talented people coming to the United States, the ones who are most dedicated and passionate, and the ones who want to have the most economic opportunity, because the United States is the land of economic opportunity. You know, when there's a reason that so many people, Ukrainians, are staying in Poland. I think it has over 2 million refugees now, which is an insanely high number.
Well, Poland is like Canada, because they just drove over or walked over.
Right, but there are many other countries like that. So, but they could have gone. There are a number of refugees who went on to Germany, went on to France, and so on. But most people are staying in Poland because they're hoping to go back to Ukraine after situation.
That's true.
The people who are coming to the United States are the people, and who are going to Germany and going to UK and so on, are the people who are not, who want to build a new life. I think that those are the people we want to welcome. So I think we want to welcome Ukrainians, and also more controversially, I think we should really want to welcome those Russians who are leaving Russia. So this people who are going to Turkey, people who are going elsewhere, I think we should welcome them to the United States, because we're getting really talented people who hate Putin and who want a free life and who want to be liberated. And we should welcome them here in the United States and give them visas as well to be eventually become Russian, for Russians to become American citizens, because we're getting the top talent. So when you're looking at who left Russia, overwhelmingly, the people who left Russia are tech-savvy, entrepreneurial people. So like your editor, who is obviously tech-savvy and entrepreneurial. And we want people like that in the United States. Right. Those are the kinds of people we want here. So welcoming Ukrainians, Russians, without evacuating them, without providing them with financial support, the people who come here will be already have money, have jobs, like your editor obviously has a job with you. And so those are the kinds of people we'll get here. And those are the kinds of people we want.
Yeah. Well, that's good. So, you know, this is great. You know, this was a great conversation, Gleb. You know, we talked about decision making. We talked about, you know, going with your gut, you know, narcissistic, psychopathic people like Putin. And we gave very real life examples of, you know, going with your gut and making, you know, bad decisions without actually, you know, asking yourself the five questions that you talked about, which is very good. And you can use that in any decision making, because, you know, every day we have decisions to make, right? And you talked about the whole gamut of it. personal, career, business decisions. Somebody comes and offers you $3 million and you're thinking that you should grab it, but you wait 5 days and you get 12. Yeah. So very, very good conversation. And we ended up with, what America can do, which is great. So hopefully, like they say, from your mouth to someone else's ears. So hopefully we have someone that's, that's listening that can run with that information. So yeah, it's really a pleasure always having you on the show, Dr. Gleb, because like I said, because you're a disaster expert, whenever we have a disaster, you come on and talk about it. So that was great. So I thank you so much. As we wrap up, tell our listeners how they can, get in touch with you for, speaking engagements, your book, your articles, your social media handles. Yeah, how they can get in touch with you.
Sure. Well, my book, Never Go With Your Gut, is available on bookstores everywhere. And there's an audiobook copy for people who like that. There's digital and physical. So check it out, Barnes & Noble, Amazon, whatever you want. Mm-hmm. My own resources are going to be at disasteravoidanceexperts.com. That's experts with an S. Disasteravoidanceexperts.com. There's my contact information for all the people who want to have questions about anything I said, or are interested in any sort of engagement, consulting, coaching, speaking, and so on. There's my blogs, videos, podcasts, audiobooks, ordinary books, online courses. Check those out. And there's a free online course, an assessment on making dangerous judgment errors, so to help you avoid those dangerous judgment errors. So if you want to take an assessment on these cognitive biases as part of an online course, check out a free course at disasteravoidanceexperts.com/subscribe. Again, disasteravoidanceexperts.com/subscribe.
And how can they find you on social media?
They can check me out on Twitter, Gleb_Cipursky. So check me out there. And I'm on LinkedIn. Just search for my name. It's pretty unique. Gleb, G-L-E-B, T-S-I-P-U-R-S-K-Y.
Awesome, awesome, awesome. Well, thank you. Our listeners know that I will have a transcription of my conversation with Dr. Gleb on the show page, which is blog.myhelps.us. And there we will have also links to his website, his book, and also the free course under subscribe. So thank you guys all for tuning in to Transform Your Mind, Transform Your Life. Today we looked at, disasters and talked about how you're transforming the mind by not going with your gut and learning how to make proper decisions. And and if you do, you would avoid disasters, in any way, right? So yes, it doesn't have to be a pandemic, it can be a personal disaster by making the wrong choice. And, that usually leads to suffering of some sort. So, transform your mind by learning to make the right decisions. Dr. Gleb, it's been a pleasure. Love having you on the show. Thank you so much for being my most, the most guest on the show. I didn't even know how to say that right. the most frequent guest, that's the word.
I'm proud to be the most frequent guest. That's wonderful. Thank you again for inviting me, Raina.
That's right. And we'll probably have you back again when there's some other thing that comes up we need to talk about. Yep. So thank you for coming on the show. Any last words before we wrap up?
I do want to remind folks that we should not trust our gut. It feels very comfortable. It feels very intuitive, but it's very wrong, no matter how comfortable and intuitive it feels. So don't trust that feeling of intuition and rightness. Instead, analyze the situation and make the best decisions.
Okay, beautiful. Well said. Thank you so much. Well, all right, guys. Well, listen, thanks for tuning in to the Transform Your Mind to Transform Your Life. I hope that you were inspired. You learned a few things today. And until next time, blessings.